Topic number two. When I recorded audio letter 69 early last month on November 8, America was waiting for the second space shuttle mission to be launched. NASA was telling the public that a mission of 5.5 days was planned, but I reported that the real plan was for an abbreviated flight. One possibility still being considered was the aborted takeoff plan, which I had first revealed 5 months earlier in audio letter 65. But in my last-minute comments last month, I reported that another plan had also surfaced, consisting of an abbreviated orbital mission. 4 days later, just after 10 a.m. November 12, the second space shuttle launch took place from Cape Canaveral, Florida. And that afternoon, just 7 hours after launch, it was announced that the flight was going to be cut short. The secret plan for an abbreviated mission was underway. As an excuse, NASA pretended that a faulty fuel cell was responsible. My friends, the abbreviated space shuttle mission of last month was the legacy of the total disaster which engulfed the first shuttle flight last April. Last April and again last month, we saw and heard no part of the real shuttle flight except the Florida takeoff. The Shuttle Columbia disaster last April was so crushing, and the NASA cover-up so elaborate that I devoted my entire audio letter 64 to that topic. The same theatrical techniques that were used to fool the public last April were used again last month, so I'll not go into all of that again. But I do want you to know what the military shuttle team tried to do last month and how it turned out. Last April, we watched the Shuttle Columbia take off from Florida, but it was a different shuttle called the Enterprise which landed in California. The Enterprise had been relabeled Columbia for purposes of deception. The Enterprise was a very special shuttle, unlike the Columbia or the three other shuttles which secretly exist. The Enterprise was a training shuttle with its cargo bay filled with rocket fuel tanks. Launched from the top of an airborne 747, the Enterprise was able to make short suborbital flights into space, but due to its fuel tanks, it could carry no payload in its cargo bay. In the wake of the secret space shuttle disaster last April, the military shuttle planter sent the Enterprise to Florida, as I detailed in audio letter 65. Originally, they were simply trying to buy time. But time is going by fast because the American Bolsheviks are on an accelerated timetable to bring on war. Arguments broke out among the military shuttle planners over the original plan to throw away a launch just to keep up appearances. A scheme was finally cooked up to use the Enterprise itself last month for a military mission. In audio letter 69, I reported that a pretended computer problem would be an important factor in the deliberately shortened second shuttle flight. Sure enough, the evening before the launch, there was a sudden flurry of activity at Cape Canaveral. Supposedly, a data processing module aboard the shuttle, that is, part of its computer system, was misbehaving. We were told that a replacement was flown in, and we saw workmen rushing to install something aboard the shuttle. It was all going on literally at the last minute, just before the large external tank started being loaded with rocket fuel. My friends, the last-minute rush at Pad 39A that evening of November 11 was not to load a computer module, as we were told. Instead, special photo reconnaissance equipment was installed in the rear deck of the crew compartment. It was arranged to look out of the two overhead windows. The Enterprise was unable to carry a spy satellite in its cargo bay, as I mentioned earlier, so instead the Enterprise itself was turned into a spy satellite. The makeshift spy apparatus installed in the crew compartment rear deck was not as good as that of a regular spy satellite, but the military planners here are desperate. It will soon be 4 years since Russia finished destroying all of America's spy satellites with her fleet of killer satellites. The military shuttle team were hoping to use surprise last month in order to get at least a little bit of reconnaissance over Russia. It was hoped that the Russians would consider the Enterprise to be no threat since it could not carry anything in its cargo bay. NASA also did everything it could to convince the Russians that a non-threatening orbit would be used last month. Finally, the launch time was shifted by about 2.5 hours on the morning of November 12. That was intended to make it hard for any Russian Cosmos interceptors to readjust their orbits to attack the Enterprise. This last item, my friends, reflects a deadly intelligence error being made by the United States military shuttle planning team. They know about Russia's orbital Cosmos interceptors, the killer satellites. They also know about the first-generation Cosmospheres, Russia's levitating weapons platforms. Both were first deployed about 4 years ago. The American planners know that the Space Shuttle can outrun the first-generation Cosmospheres. Therefore, they believe that the orbiting Cosmos interceptors are the main threat to the Shuttle. What they do not know so far is that Russia now has a small fleet of semi-experimental second-generation Cosmospheres. Last April, there were 7 in operation. Now there are at least 8. These new Cosmospheres, called Super Heavies or Jumbos, can outrun and outlift our Space Shuttle. The Russians gave NASA a very spectacular hint about their existence last April, as I detailed in AUDIO LETTER 64. There are some in America's intelligence community who have correctly interpreted what happened, but the Bolsheviks here who control America's military space program are refusing to believe it. They are explaining away the fragments of intelligence about the new Russian jumbo Cosmospheres and thereby guaranteeing their own failure. When the Enterprise, relabeled Columbia, took off from Florida last month, there were no human pilots aboard. It was a suicide mission. The Enterprise followed an evasive curving launch, just as the Columbia did last April. It headed far to the north toward a near-polar orbit. When it passed over Russia, the Enterprise was to be upside down, with its spy cameras staring downward through the crew compartment windows. 5 jumbo Cosmospheres were on hand and kept pace with the Shuttle as it climbed toward orbit. But when they notified Moscow of the course it was taking, they were told not to fire. Instead, the Russian ballistic missile defense forces were alerted. The Russians know war is coming, and they decided to use the approach of the Shuttle as a test drill. Nearly 2 years ago, I reported that Russia was preparing to deploy a new anti-ballistic missile system. It's based on charged particle beam weapons fired from modified supersonic Tu-144 jet transports. On November 12, a squadron of Tu-144s were scrambled to intercept and shoot down the Enterprise. The jumbo Cosmospheres continued pacing the Shuttle from a distance as a backup if the Tu-144s should fail, but they did not fail. The Enterprise swept downward from the north across the strategic Kola Peninsula. As it crossed over the White Sea, the big jets began firing upward with their beam weapons at the Shuttle far above. The third beam blast tore through the midsection of the Shuttle, and it broke in half just behind the crew compartment and disintegrated. Here in the United States, NASA went ahead with its made-for-television space movies and followed the pre-planned script for a shortened mission. They knew within an hour after launch that the Enterprise had been destroyed. Having learned about Russia's plans last April to create an international incident with a crashed Shuttle, they wanted to complete the flight in the world's eyes quickly. The Shuttle landing at Edwards Air Force Base, California on November 14 was a replay of the show we saw last April. And when I say replay, my friends, I mean it literally. Those long-distance telephoto shots of the Shuttle swooping in from the stratosphere were the same ones that we saw last April. NASA merely fed videotapes of the long-distance scenes from last April to the networks and added a fresh narrative to them. The only part of the landing that was live last month was the terminal portion, which could be seen from the ground. The shuttle we saw land, my friends, was one of the secret new shuttles from White Sands. It had been carried aloft by the Launch 747 aircraft, boosted to a modest speed and altitude by a pair of solid-fuel booster rockets, and then swooped down to delight the crowd. As of now, NASA claims to be planning the third shuttle flight for March 1982, just 3 months from now. And, my friends, this time the launch may well take place on schedule or close to it. The embarrassing quandary of what to do with the Enterprise is now over with. Now a new shuttle, the third we have seen with the name Columbia on it, is at Cape Canaveral. Its cargo bay awaits a new secret military payload. My friends, this shuttle has been modified. It is armed for battle in space. But the Bolshevik military planners here refuse to understand what they are really up against. And so at Cape Canaveral, another tragedy is now in the making. Topic number 3. For 8 years now, the powers that be here in America have kept a blackout on the covered-up Fort Knox gold scandal and are allegedly free press. But outside the United States, there is a new upsurge of journalistic interest in what has happened to our gold. Unlike the controlled American major media, some foreign reporters have started asking questions again, and some of them don't like the answers they are getting from the United States Treasury Department. Earlier this month, in its December 15, 1981 issue, a nationally circulated tabloid called The Globe published a cover story about our missing gold. It was titled, appropriately, $66 billion in gold gone from Fort Knox, unquote. The Globe appears on newsstands and supermarkets and drugstores all over the United States, but its editorial control lies outside the American blackout in Canada. And just 2 weeks ago on Sunday, December 13, an even harder-hitting article was published in England in the Sunday Express of London. It was titled, United States Probes Fort Knox Robbery. The article, written by correspondent David Markham, begins, quote, "The American Gold Commission in Washington will this week begin an examination of Treasury documents to decide whether 7,000 tons of gold, enough to fill 300 lorries, has been stolen from Fort Knox, the world's biggest and most protected bullion store." Unquote. The article then reviews the basic charges which I have made, together with my friend Mr. Edward Durrell, and it mentions that the Treasury is trying to refute our charges by providing certain documents to the Gold Commission. The article then zeroes in on the question of the missing 165 million ounces of Fort Knox gold that I reported on in the spring of this year. If you will recall, I urged all my listeners to send mailgrams to the entity President Reagan last spring, demanding that this be looked into immediately. Based on glaring conflicts among the Treasury's own documents, this staggering amount of gold disappeared without a trace from 1961 to 1971. Those of you who did as I asked last spring received your own evidence that this administration, like those before it, is sitting on the gold scandal. They're continuing to cover it up, and the replies you received did not answer the question of the missing 165 million ounces of Fort Knox gold. The London Sunday Express article, which I mentioned a moment ago, focused in on that awesome amount of missing gold. They asked the Treasury Department to explain it, and now listen to the incredible reply they received. Quoting once again from the article, "At the Treasury Department in Washington, Jerry Nicenson, Deputy Director of Gold Market Activities, said, 'We have investigated the claims of Dr. Beter and his supporters, and we contend that the gold was not stolen. There is no cover-up. They have misinterpreted our books. The gold was being refined into better quality gold, and those ounces just went up the chimney.'" Unquote. My friends, If anyone swallows that explanation, then I give up. 300 truckloads of gold went up the chimney? If it did, then enough gold dust should have settled out of the air to gold plate New York City. The United States Treasury Department is continuing its cover-up of what the London Sunday Express article says, quote, would amount to the biggest theft in criminal history, unquote. My friends, they are lying. And because they are lying, the Fort Knox gold scandal refuses to die. One might think that the forces behind the ransacking of Fort Knox might want to lay low for a while under the circumstances. But no, those who stole the Fort Knox gold have so far been powerful enough to keep it under wraps. They are so arrogant that they believe they can never be stopped, and so they are now compounding the felony with a new Fort Knox-style gold theft. It's going on right now as I say these words. The target this time is the United States Treasury Assay Office in New York City. The New York Assay Office is the Treasury's second largest depository for gold. Having successfully robbed Fort Knox, which is the biggest depository, the New York Assay Office is next in line. In late October, rumors circulated briefly in New York City that the so-called Reagan administration plans to close the Assay Office. For that reason, the rumors said that the gold there might be moved out and taken to the West Point Depository up the Hudson River from New York. An article about it was published in the New York Daily News for October 27, 1981. Treasury officials immediately denied it all, saying no shipments of gold out of the New York Assay Office were imminent. But as usual, my friends, they lied. At 10 p.m. Saturday night, November 7, 1981, a secret meeting got underway at the New York Assay Office. Those present included Donna Pope, Director of the Mint, Dr. Alan Goldman, Deputy Director of the Mint, James Edwards, Officer in Charge at the West Point Depository, New York Assay Office employees, and others. The entire group remained at the Assay Office overnight. Then at 5 a.m. the following Sunday morning, November 8, they departed. They were accompanying the first secret shipment of gold out of the New York Assay Office, reportedly bound for the West Point Depository. The shipment consisted of 4 truckloads, totaling 2.18 million ounces. Shipments have been continuing like this ever since. Every shipment leaves in the dead of night in elaborate secrecy. Everyone at the Assay Office who knows about the shipments has been sworn to secrecy about them. Meanwhile, the gold stock there is being depleted rapidly, 4 tractor trailer loads at a time. I can report that shipments of 4 truckloads each left the New York Assay Office on December 10 and December 11. The combined total amounted to 144 skids with 80 bars each, or over 11,500 bars totaling over 4.5 million ounces. Additional shipments of 4 truckloads each were scheduled for December 17 and 20, according to my latest information. There is a mad rush to complete all shipments before the end of the year. New York Assay Office employees who see all this going on are being given the excuse that this is being done for security reasons, quote unquote. But that, my friends, is ridiculous. In spite of the security problems at the Assay Office, which I have discussed in the past, security at West Point is vastly inferior. The West Point Depository was never designed for gold bullion safekeeping. It's mainly for the storage of pennies. It's not designed as a fortress like the New York Assay Office. There's no high security gold vault at West Point. There are no iron gates, no bars, no military guards. And unlike the New York Assay Office, which is situated in Lower Manhattan, the West Point Depository is isolated, totally isolated. Anything could go on there and no one would know. The point is this, my friends. The gold is supposedly being moved secretly to a location without adequate storage facilities and with very low security. In other words, it's being made easy to steal. And, my friends, I have already received preliminary reports the sum of this gold has already begun going to places other than the West Point Depository. Meanwhile, day by day, the economic news becomes more gloomy. America's economy, once the strongest in the world, is coming apart at the seams. The United States dollar, once as good as gold, is shriveling before our very eyes. In pretended response, our leaders are giving us nothing but theories, rhetoric, political grandstanding, and hypocrisy. They continue to paper over and cover up the root causes of our economic woes. Up to now, the so-called Reagan administration has been guilty mainly of hiding the past thefts of America's gold, but now they are compounding their guilt. A major new gold theft scandal is brewing at the New York Assay Office. The entity known as Ronald Reagan pretends to be upset over alleged mistreatment of the Polish people, and yet he is mistreating his own people in many ways. Now it's time for my last-minute summary. My friends, the Christmas crises involving Libya, Poland, and the Israeli annexation of Syria's Golan Heights have nudged us one step closer to nuclear war I. War preparations continue apace, involving the space shuttle and many other secret developments. Events are speeding up. Under the circumstances, I have some comments to make about the future of my Audio Letter Intelligence Report series. As you know, I initiated my audio letter as a monthly report on cassette tape 6.5 years ago in June 1975. Almost 2 years ago, in February 1980, my tape reports were interrupted by a near-fatal heart attack. By the grace of God, I recovered enough to resume my audio letter reports 4 months later in June 1980. Since that time, my health has continued to improve, and today I feel that it is essentially back to normal. And yet, you have probably noticed that these days I am no longer recording the audio letter on a truly monthly basis. This is not because I am physically unable to do it. Instead, it's because the events taking place behind closed doors have repeatedly been delayed in coming to fruition. Rather than give you a partial report, I have waited to give you the full story. But now, as we draw closer and closer to war, events are speeding up. Some of you have asked me to release reports more often. Many of you have also indicated your interest in receiving some type of printed reports. And I cannot ignore the fact that due to the current recession, more and more people who are interested feel that they can no longer afford a cassette tape. At the same time, we too are being squeezed by ever-increasing costs in this stagflation era. I have given considerable thought to how to meet these emerging needs, and I believe the time has come for a new phase in my Audio Letter Intelligence Report program. In this new phase, my cassette tape reports will continue on a less frequent basis, and they will be joined by a completely new printed newsletter, which will be more frequent and less expensive. To be more specific, here's what I propose to do. First, my basic audio letter cassette tape reports will continue, but on a less frequent basis. My present plan is to record Audio Letter 71 next month, January 1982, and then quarterly after that, that is, every 3 months. When I record each audio letter tape, I will try to concentrate on broad perspectives and major basic new intelligence. Second, for the first time ever, I now hope to inaugurate a brief printed newsletter soon to be known as the Audio Letter Update. My hope is to issue the printed update report every 2 weeks, except when I record a tape, and 2 holidays per year. That is, there will be 20 printed update issues per year. My printed update newsletter will be exactly what the name implies, a fast update on fast-breaking events behind closed doors. Most of the basic background you need in order to understand coming events has already been presented in my 70 audio letter tapes, plus several audio book tapes. With events now speeding up, My printed update newsletter will refer you back to this information which is already available, and on that basis it will bring you up to date on the latest developments. Subscription prices for the new printed update newsletter will come to less than $10 for 3 months at this time in the United States and Canada. There will also be greatly reduced prices for multiple copies of any issue. Many of you have told me that you want this so that you can help spread the truth to others more quickly. You will be able to subscribe in any one of three ways. You can subscribe to my audio letter tape alone if you wish, receiving it quarterly after number 71. Or you may subscribe to the reduced cost printed update newsletter only, receiving it every 2 weeks with 6 exceptions throughout the year. Or you may subscribe to both, which I recommend if you can afford it. Incidentally, the combined price of both subscriptions, tape plus printed update newsletter, will be about the same as the tape alone in the past. For those who have paid up subscriptions to my audio letter beyond number 71, naturally we will make equitable arrangements to accommodate you. My friends, our business office will be in touch with you about the details concerning your subscription after I record audio letter 71 next month. But for now, I wanted you to know my thinking and give you a chance to respond. After a great deal of thought and consultation with my associates, I believe that this new step may be necessary. In this way, I believe I can serve your needs as you have expressed them to me. Also, I believe this is a way to help you to keep up with the increasing pace of life and death events. Let me hear any thoughts you may have about this new plan right away, by card or letter. I want to know your reactions before I announce my final decision about it next month in audio letter 71. To make sure I get your messages as quickly as possible, please send your cards and letters to me at our business office in Maryland. The address is Post Office Box 276, Savage, S-A-V-A-G-E, Maryland, ZIP 20763. You may enclose your thoughts to me with renewal or other orders, but please be sure to use a separate piece of paper. My friends, events are speeding up, and those events are leading toward nuclear war I. But my hope and prayer is that in the coming year you and I can work together to help give the truth of our Lord Jesus Christ a chance in our troubled world. If we will do that, then we will all be doing our part to help make 1982 a happy, holy, and peaceful new year. Until the next time, God willing, this is Dr. Beter. Thank you, and may God bless each and every one of you.